A nice glass of wine may seem like a luxury during tough economic times, but it is possible to indulge without breaking the bank. As Weekend Edition food commentator Bonnie Wolf discovered, a sweet Italian wine is gaining new popularity with a little help from some big-name fans.
It's a celebration. Clap, clap, bravo. Lobster and shrimp and a glass of Moscato for the girl.
That was hip-hop singer Drake with a shout-out to an Italian dessert wine? The same wine a handful of other hip-hop artists sing about. The wine Kanye West orders for special parties. The wine Real Housewife of Atlanta, NeNe Leakes, has just started selling under the label Miss Moscato. Until a few years ago, the ancient Italian wine Moscato could have been described as obscure, what one wine expert called a little backwater grape. Now the words used about the rise of Moscato are breathtaking, phenomenal, insane. Industry watchers say they've never seen anything like it. Danny Brager, VP of the Alcoholic Beverages Division at Nielsen, says Moscato madness is not just on the coasts. It's not only in cities. It's everywhere. According to Brager, a Nielsen analysis found Moscato sales up 73% in the 12 months ending January 7th. That's on top of the 100% growth from 2010. It is the fastest-growing varietal wine in the country. Brager says every wine supplier is racing to get on this trend. They're combing the world for more grapes and growing their own. It's no longer only small Italian wineries. Jugs of Barefoot Moscato are sold at BJ's Wholesale Club. It's on the menu at Olive Garden. What's up with that? Well, it's inexpensive, generally $8 to $20 a bottle. Good price point in a recession. It's low in alcohol and has a slightly sweet, fresh flavor with hints of peaches, apricots, pears, orange blossoms, rose petals. All nice. And sweet wines are selling big, especially to the under-40 crowd who grew up imbibing sugary drinks. Then there's the whole hip-hop edgy thing. Drink Moscato and you'll be cool like rapper Waka Flocka, which marketers pick up on, or start, and the whole thing goes round and round. It happened with Cristal Champagne, Hennessy Cognac, and Patron Tequila. But why Moscato, once a niche after-dinner wine nice with fruit desserts? It may remain one of life's mysteries, but as hip-hop artist Ab Soul sings,
Bonnie Wolf is the author of Talking with My Mouth Full and contributing editor of NPR's Kitchen Window. This is NPR News. The debt crisis in Europe is taking a toll on Spain's wine market. Many Spaniards can no longer afford their own beloved Rioja, so the country's winemakers are looking abroad for a much-needed bump in sales. Lauren Freyer reports.
Judging from the crowds in Spain's tapas bars, you might wonder where the economic crisis is. But there's been a subtle change. Many are drinking less wine or switching to beer.
It's more expensive to have a good wine, and you can get two beers for the same price that you can get one wine.
Marta Juan Seva sips a cerveza at a sidewalk cafe in Madrid. Her friend Carlos Zavala chimes in. He's unemployed but says staying home is not an option.
In Spain, everyone socializes in bars and restaurants, and every single block that at least there's a bar.
And the bars measure the economic tides in Spain. Wine used to be just for the dinner table, but after the euro and Spain's construction boom, fancy wine bars started popping up. Spain's foremost wine expert, José Peñin, says those bars made wine cool. But unfortunately, that's also coincided with the economic crisis, he says. So we've seen no growth in domestic consumption. That's hurt even the oldest wineries in Rioja, the Spanish region famous for shipping grapes to France in the 19th century, when a plague wiped out Bordeaux's harvest. Legend has it aristocrats couldn't tell the difference between French and Spanish grapes, and Rioja has flourished since then. Maria José López de Heredia runs Rioja's Viña Tondonia winery, which her great-grandfather founded. On a tour of its cavernous cellar, she explains her business model.
The problem is that the restaurants were demanding for dropping the prices. And I told them, no way, because my costs are the same, I started to sell more abroad.
She's hoping to sell half her wines overseas this year, up from 30% a few years ago. Spanish wines go mostly to Germany, the UK and America. But now a neighbouring vintner, Simone Arena, is learning Chinese.
China brings wines because it's prestigious. Buy the more expensive wine in China.
China ranks fifth for Spanish wine exports, but it's the biggest growth market. And there's volume here to export. Spain has the most wine acreage in the world. But economist Pankaj Ghemawat says Spanish winemakers face stiff competition.
If you think of the number of new wine growers around the world, Australia, Chile, South Africa, and how low costs are in some of these locations, especially the ones that have gone in for an industrial approach to winemaking, competing head-to-head with them doesn't sound like a great idea.
Back at the Viña Tondonia winery, owner Maria Jose strolls past oak barrels, reassuring herself that the family business is strong enough to take on new challenges.
My grandfather died when I was 17. He was 96 years old, and he told us a lot of stories about the war, and my father started from zero after the war. So I'm aware in my family of what it is suffering and going through very difficult times.
Outside in the fields, workers are pruning the same grapevines Maria Jose's great-grandfather planted. Inside, she pops open a bottle of red and wonders where next year's harvest will end up. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Freyer in Rioja, Spain.
You are listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Lamb is more popular than ever, and prices for the meat are at an all-time high. But American sheep farmers are worried. Their afraid too much demand will hurt them in the long run. They say they need more farmers to raise sheep, and that existing sheep farmers need to increase the size of their flocks. Fred Kite of member station WOUB in Athens, Ohio, has this report.
This young sheep is in a holding pen in Don Van Ostrand's barn in southeast Ohio. It soon will be butchered and sold as lamb in a local Kroger store. The sheep is about 6 months old, not 6 weeks old. When city folks think of lamb, they tend to think of very young lamb. But 6 months is the average age of spring lamb going to market. But don't confuse this with the meat of older sheep that can be tough and less tasty. It's spring lamb that's very much in demand these days as an alternative to beef, chicken, and pork. While the cost is generally higher, consumers still demand high-quality American lamb. Large numbers of immigrants from Africa and the Middle East, especially Muslims, often favor lamb or goat over beef.
Lamb is a popular meat among other cultures.
Don Van Ostrand and other sheep farmers are happy that consumers are putting more lamb on their dinner tables. And farmers are making good money with lamb prices at an all-time high. Chops can go for about $15 a pound. Compare that to some chicken cuts in the $2 range and comparable beef at about $5 a pound. Still, there's concern about the future. Kurt Klein is another Southeast Ohio sheep farmer who worries about producing enough.
There needs to be a certain level of numbers of head of sheep to support infrastructure.
Infrastructure like processing plants and veterinary support. Klein says the long-term sustainability of the industry is at stake.
So if the infrastructure falls apart, you're kind of left hanging. I don't view somebody else getting a flock of sheep as competition. I view them as partners.
The American Sheep Industry Association is calling on existing sheep producers to expand and on new farmers to start production. This national initiative, launched last year, has a goal of producing 315,000 additional lambs by 2014. Both Klein and Van Ostrand have signed on to be part of that effort. Van Ostrand says there's a lot of room for growth in this region, but not so much out west, where ranchers don't have access to additional grazing land.
It's new farmers that are interested, but I think that also the expansion is coming primarily through the Midwest and the East.
Agriculture officials think young farmers should be attracted to raising sheep because it's relatively low cost compared to other herds. Sheep need fewer acres for grazing than cattle, for example, and sheep are significantly cheaper to feed. But sheep do come with a host of disease issues and, unlike cattle, have a number of predators. Sheep farming also can be labor-intensive, especially when ewes are giving birth. But for today's sheep farmers, this intense labor seems to be paying off. For NPR News, I'm Fred Kite in Athens, Ohio.
Some cheese lovers are taking issue with a new billboard campaign. It's trying to scare them away from their beloved mozzarella and cheddar. One billboard in Albany, New York, features a huge photo of an overweight woman. She's squeezing the fattest part of her thighs with the message, "Your thighs on cheese," emblazoned across the side. NPR's Allison Aubrey explains who's hanging these billboards and why.
There's no doubting the fact that we've become a nation of cheese lovers. In fact, if you're doing your part, as I think I am, we're eating about 31 pounds of cheese a year, each of us. At least, this is what the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates. And Melanie Seiden is no exception.
I eat it all the time, and, you know, I can't say enough good things, but, you know, I don't have quote-unquote cottage cheese thighs, as far as I know.
Seiden lives in East Greenbush, New York, not far from one of the new anti-cheese billboards. She's always thought of cheese as healthy, so why the scary close-ups of pouchy stomachs and doughy thighs? Well, the billboards were hung by a group called Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. It's led by Neil Barnard.
If you look at the chemical makeup of what's in cheese, it's mostly saturated fats, the kind that's linked to heart disease. It's very high in cholesterol, ounce per ounce, about the same as any steak you can find, and surprisingly high in sodium. So how often do you want to eat such an unhealthy food? I would argue never.
Never eat cheese? Barnard, who's a physician by training, has long advocated his personal belief that a vegan diet is the healthiest way to eat. No dairy, no meat, no animal products at all. Now, this is a long way from mainstream nutrition advice, and federal guidelines say it's okay to get small amounts, up to 10% of your calories, from saturated fat, including cheese, which does contain two things our bodies need, calcium and protein. But Barnard says his billboards are meant to wake people up.
Cheese is the number one source. Cheese and other dairy products are the leading source of the saturated fat that our kids are swallowing. And I think most Americans are totally oblivious to it.
Barnard argues that we deceive ourselves into thinking that we're eating cheese in moderation when we're not. We sprinkle it on salads, slap it in our sandwiches, layer it in our burritos, and slather it on our pizza. In fact, since 1970, our per-person consumption has almost tripled. That's a lot of cheese. But we don't want to hear that message. When I called a few people in Albany who'd driven by the billboards, they said they found them obnoxious. And in Wisconsin, when Barnard's group designed a billboard portraying the Grim Reaper wearing a cheesehead hat, there was outrage. One farmer even said, "What's the problem? Look at the French." All of this made me wonder, the French love cheese. Are they having this food fight?
Hello?
Hi, it's Alice Aubrey.
1 second, please.
I put a call into the French embassy to Antonin Baudry, a cultural attaché, who told me the French are not struggling over their relationship with cheese.
I personally eat a lot of cheese, and I'm not very fat.
Now, to be fair, the French are getting heavier, but they're not fingering cheese as the culprit. And Baudry says there is a big difference between their way of eating cheese and ours.
I mean, we don't eat cheese inside of a sandwich or whatever. We stop everything else. And we eat it really for what it is.
A treat to savor at the end of a meal.
Camembert, there is brie, bleu, there is pont l'évêque. We believe in cheese. It's like a religion.
And yes, it's rich and full of calories. But Baudry says...
A very common expression in French is fromage ou dessert, means cheese or dessert. Means you cannot have both in your life. You have to choose.
So it's back to the idea of moderation. But doesn't it sound so much more palatable in French? Allison Aubrey, NPR News.